Well, the great mezzo-soprano Joyce DiDonato is back in town. The Prairie Village native is performing at the Lyric Opera for a week-long run beginning on Saturday. She's just back from a performance at Royal Albert Hall in London, where her dress drew admiring gasps from the audience and where she sang Over the Rainbow as a tribute to the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community, whose voices, she said, are being silenced, particularly in Russia. She's a Grammy winner, and she recently collaborated with her fan base to release a best-of album titled Rejoice. More on that in just a minute. Joyce DiDonato, welcome back. So good to have you here again.
Thank you, Steve. I'm thrilled. It feels like I'm really coming home when I come back
to the
studio now.
I'm glad. That's the way it should be. Thanks. Also here is General Director and the CEO of the Lyric, Deborah Sandler. Deborah, nice to have you, too, again.
Nice
welcome
to be
back.
Here, Steve. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, Joyce, your performance in London was broadcast via the BBC to nearly 2 million viewers. What was going through your head when you walked onto the stage that evening?
You know, I've actually sung at the Royal Albert Hall in the Proms a few times before, but this is a legendary night. This is the night that closes this nearly two-month-long classical music festival, and everybody had warned me that there's really nothing else like it in the world. So I was trying to psych myself up and trying to imagine, you know, the pressure and the excitement and all that. And literally when I walked out onto the stage and you see it's replete with all kinds of flags of a lot of British countries, but a lot of, you know, you see Spain, you see France, everybody. Yeah. And the colors and the excitement and the palpitation of that place, I've really never experienced anything like it in my life.
And it's different than anything else because it's pretty interactive, right? Explain how the whole thing sort of works, because it's not like what a lot of folks over here are used to.
Well, there's no rules. I'm not sure I can explain it. You know, I walk out and I'm wearing a rather lovely dress by Vivian Westwood. She did it for me. It was one of the most exquisite things I've ever seen.
The audience gasped.
They gasped.
I read it.
And then there's this quiet hush as the conductor's about to lift her baton and somebody says, "Nice dress."
Yes.
And so you just think
nice
they're
dress.
Saying, thank you very much. Yeah, that was a terrible Dick Van Dyke. That's my British accent. But it is interactive. They're excited. This is a BBC Proms. This is done all by taxpayer money. I don't think we realize that over here. And so this really does belong to the people. And they take that very seriously. It's the people that decorate the podium at night. They're interactive. They give all the orchestra members boutonnieres. And it's a really extraordinary sort of love fest between the public and the singers and musicians.
When someone shouts out, "Nice dress," and that's got to give you a little boost, right? When you hear
Absolutely.
Something like that.
Yeah. And it's a bit of a relief, too, because there's a lot of pressure on that. You know, it's like, is it going to be, you know, are they going to like it or not? Because also, too, British tastes sometimes differ a little bit from American taste. So you're trying to find the thing that feels comfortable but that is going to have good impact.
And I should point out that at the Proms, you were led by conductor Maren Alsop, if
yes.
I'm saying that right, the first woman to ever conduct the last night of the Proms in its 119-season history. Do you think this signals some kind of change in the tradition out there?
Well, I think it's a momentous occasion, no doubt. And I think about the 8-year-old girl that's watching it for the first time going, "Oh, I want to do that," and not thinking that it's anything extraordinary.
Yeah.
Maren gave a wonderful talk. It's traditional that the conductor will give a speech at the Proms. And she said it is kind of extraordinary that in 2013 that women can still have firsts.
Yeah.
But it's a reality. It's happening. And she received rave reviews for her musicianship. At the end of the night, it came down to her conducting and not her gender. And I thought that was an extraordinary display on her case.
Well, Deborah Sandler with the Lyric, you can sort of relate to this. You're the first woman to lead the Lyric Opera. So maybe not exactly the same thing, but kind of the same thing. Yeah.
I think it's true. I mean, frequently in our professional journals and the websites that we read, they talk about, you know, the small number of female directors and conductors who have made it to the top. Now, in the orchestra world, there are more female executive directors and general managers of symphonies. In the opera world, it continues to be a little more infrequent.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, I mean, I, you know, Joyce has broken every barrier there can in every way, and Marin's a fabulous conductor. But I think there's still a glass ceiling to a certain extent.
Well, how many general directors and CEOs of opera companies in this country are there? How select is your company out there?
How many professional companies are there in general, or how many have female general directors?
The latter, yeah.
Well, you know, our budget levels range. There are about 135 professional companies that belong to Opera America, our service organization. And they range in budget size anywhere from about $100,000 up to the Met, which is quite large. Mm-hmm. And among that group, some have different titles, but I would say we're about four or five for
wow.
that entire group.
In the entire country?
In the entire country.
That's amazing. Do you see it changing? Is your hiring here a harbinger of more female hirings to come?
Well, I hope it is. I think that it's incumbent upon our field to mentor young women who have talent. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to see us do more of that. So I hope it is.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw in an interview with you, Joyce, where you said that imagination was one of the most important qualities in an opera singer. What did you mean by that, imagination?
Well, I think, you know, there is a certain constraint that we have on us in that we're the majority of the time when we're dealing with older works and not world premieres. That's an exception.
Yeah.
You know, we're looking at a piece of paper written by somebody who's passed, deceased, and we have a lot of notes and we have a lot of indications and a lot of details. And we can do that exactly as prescribed and bring it to life in a certain way, but I think it can end up being a bit two-dimensional. I think what needs to happen for that to come to life, especially when we're talking about doing it in today's day and age, something that was written centuries ago, especially in the case of Kansas City, we're doing the Romeo and Juliet story here,
yes.
Cappelletti Montecchi. It's based on a literary source that goes back five centuries, written by a man written almost two centuries ago. So how do we come and bring that into today's thing? I think we have to let our imagination take flight. We have to understand what maybe these musical phrases meant. We might have to understand how to dig a little bit deeper into the text. We've been talking a lot about on this piece, most of these operas that are quite emotional and highly charged, they were all written pre-Freud.
Huh.
We haven't the faintest idea how to process things in 21st century because the Freud idea of psychology is just inherent in us. That wasn't even on the radar screen when these things were written. I mean, I think people sensed it, but they certainly hadn't
That's
studied
really interesting.
It. So we have to, I think, infuse the works a little bit with our modern sensibility. And what I have found, with extreme exception, is that it's always there in the music. It's always there in the text. We just have to help give it flight a little bit.
You know, I was struck by the fact that when you sang just in London, you made a point of singing Over the Rainbow. And mm-hmm. you did it as a tribute to the LGBT community. Why did you do it? What was the point of it, and how did that go over?
Well, as I was leading up to the preparation for this, all the news coming out of Russia about this anti-gay propaganda law.
Olympic boycotts, everything else.
Yeah, it was really hot in the news and certainly in my circle of friends. I have a number of gay, lesbian, I don't really have a transgender friend, but I would love them anyway if I did. And there's also supposed to be a Q in there now for queer. I don't know. But it was really heavy in my heart. And it's something that is very, very personal to me, because we have the Supreme Court just, you know, passing the DOMA. I have my friends that would say to me just weeks ago when this law passed, I had no idea how much of a secondary citizen I actually felt until they passed this federal law. And now I realize, oh, I can actually play at the big kids table, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very personal to me. And I don't know what dedicating a song actually does to people, but I can tell you by doing that, I received hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of emails and tweets and Facebook things from 70-year-old man saying, if this had happened when I was your age, I might not have considered suicide. I might not have been alone for the rest of my life. I mean, really, these are real human beings.
You know, the whole thing with Last Night of the Proms, it's not political. So how did you approach the notion to let people know you were singing the song for a specific reason?
Well, this is something I've actually done in the past. In on rare occasion, I will take to my social media, Twitter and Facebook.
And let the word go forth.
And just say I'm dedicating tonight's show to the ex. I haven't done it a lot. I've done it very selectively. And so I thought, you know, I have a precedence of doing that. And I was very aware that I was an invited guest to this occasion. You know, I'm not British.
So you didn't really deal with it from the stage, then, it doesn't sound like.
Yeah, no, I didn't want to hijack it. I didn't want to turn it into something personal for me because I thought this is an event that doesn't belong to me. I'm a guest. But I did want to put it out there in a way. It's a high-profile gig, and I have to say I think the response was absolutely worth it.
You know, our morning drive announcer, you know, Kim Noble was over in London when you sang, and it was on TV, and she said that the fact that you wore ruby red slippers that for the singing of that song was lost on everybody. Nobody got
it. It's true.
Yeah. Just didn't get it at all. And the announcer also said that Joyce DiDonato lives in a prairie village in Kansas. A little a prairie village.
A prairie village. It kind of changes the context, doesn't it? Yeah. But it's they kind of love the fact that I'm from Kansas over there. I'm proud of it.
Let's listen to Joyce DiDonato sing Over the Rainbow. That's the Joyce DiDonato performing with the Kansas City Symphony with a Grammy-nominated CD, Homecoming, right, Joyce?
Yes.
Congratulations. Just terrific. You know, Deborah, you took over as general director of the Lyric from Evan Luskin, who was here many times. He'd been director for 14 years. The Kauffman Center was freshly built when you came on. How daunting was it to take over at such a pivotal time like that?
Well, I don't know if I would use the word daunting.
Yeah.
I'd say it was tremendously exciting and inspirational.
Yeah.
And a wonderful platform from which to envision a whole new and next chapter for Lyric Opera. And I am tremendously invigorated by that challenge, and I think the staff is as well. So I consider myself very lucky. I have a sort of a tabula rosa to just work on.
Oh, that's
so
great.
It's wonderful. You know, we have a new opera center as well, so that helps us.
It helps a lot.
Yes.
When you were appointed general director of the Lyric a little over a year ago, you said this: my philosophy is to inspire and to innovate and to involve. Do you feel like you've done that? And how has the Lyric sort of changed and grown since you've been there?
We're in the process of doing all of that. I think we are working on the inspire, the involve we're working on. I mean, we have plans for how we are going to make the opera company even more relevant within the community. And having the wonderful facility that we have at the Lyric Opera Center gives us an additional performance space. So we have already started having community events. You know, we had a First Friday event 2 Fridays ago. We had 300 people in our building.
No kidding.
And
that's a way to involve the community, right?
That's one way to involve the community.
It's called outreach, I think. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's one of many, many events to come. I'd like to see us start to do more varied works in our space that are not quite as big as what we put on the Kaufman stage and are perhaps a little bit more urban and edgy.
Yeah, which is maybe needed.
Yeah, I think we have to break down the impression of what people think opera is. Opera can be many different things, and it doesn't just happen in an enormous performance space.
Yeah.
And it doesn't use the same core of instrumental players that people might think of. So it's a great opportunity for us.
Let's talk a little bit about the Capulets and the Montagues, the show that Joyce is involved with this weekend. I read that this opera is based on Renaissance legend rather than Shakespeare's play. Are there any major differences between the two? Give me a little rundown what it's like, either one of you.
Yeah. Well, I think the title says a lot. It's called I Capuletti e Montecchi, which is the Capulets and the Montagues. That tells you right away that we're telling the story of the families of this opera, which means it's a tale of war, essentially, these two families that have been at war for a long time. The main difference is in the first act. Romeo and Juliet are already in love. They've already been lovers. The balcony scene has already happened. The masked ball has already happened. And Juliet is being kept captive, and so Romeo's trying to find a way to get in and either broker peace between the families so they could be together, which fails miserably after the first few minutes, or steal her away. Ah. By the time we get to the second act, we sort of join up to what we'll know as Shakespeare. There's the famous tomb scene. I mean, I think that's the most important part of the whole thing anyway, and that very much will line up with the story that people know.
And Joyce, you're playing the trouser role of Romeo in the opera. How does playing the part of a man, you know, change your singing, change your acting?
Well, I don't know that it changes anything. I just have to try and be true to it. I mean, I love playing young men on the stage. There's a power involved in it. That's great. Bellini has done, the composer, has done most of the work for me. I mean, the way he writes Romeo's lines, there's Juliet, you'll hear, is very sort of limpid music, very feminine. And Romeo's can be very aggressive, as well as also the poetic, more romantic side. But it waffles between those two extremes.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just have to walk a little more squarely and a little less gently, which is, that's fine with me.
Introduce a little bit of the music we're going to hear here from this one, Joyce. What are we going to hear?
This is Romeo's entrance aria when he's disguised himself as a messenger for the Montagues, trying desperately to broker peace. He's not referencing the fact that he's just killed the son of Capulet, but he's saying, listen, I have this idea. Let's try and find peace between the families.
Let's listen. The Capulets and the Montagues open Saturday night at the Lyric. This will be at the Kaufman Center. Tickets, kcopera.org. Deborah, you're staging this one. Is this a vehicle for Joyce, or why are you doing this thing?
Well, of course it's a vehicle
of
for Joyce.
Of course it is. Yeah, of course it is, yeah.
But it's it's also a vehicle for her teammates, her castmates.
Tell us about that.
So one of the good pieces of news that I got when I accepted the job was to hear that there had been a commitment to Joyce. She had chosen this work. there had not been a lot of planning done. So when I heard about it, I said, okay, well, we're going to make it great. We're going to support Joyce in every way possible and surround her with a cast and a production concept and team that will be equal to her level of artistry.
Mm-hmm.
And so I knew of the work of Kevin Newberry, very fine director. And we called Kevin and we talked to him and said, you know, what do you think? And he brought to us a wonderful production designer, Vida Tikkun, who is doing the scenery and the costumes. And we cast it with Bill Burden and with Nicole Cabell. And it's a wonderful cast. And they have a very interesting take on the production. The idea is to take the themes that Bellini wrote with the story of the Capulets and the Montagues and to make it relevant for everyone. Because the concept of ongoing conflict and the people who are trying to live their everyday lives in that context is eternal. I mean, you know, the current world events show us that right now.
Yeah.
I have to interrupt, but I just want to say, for example, one of our chorus men is an Iraq veteran. And here we are, we're seeing these guys. He's giving us all lessons on how to hold a gun because we're setting it in sort of modern-ish times. It's sort of a timeless period, but it's contemporary. And I'm watching him in these rehearsals. And at the beginning, they're seeing a fallen comrade being carted away, and they're all having to go to sleep in this bunker. Mm. And I'm sitting here going, this is his life. This is what he lived. And it's what's on his face is extraordinary. And that's sort of oozing out into all the other chorus members and to the principals as well. It's like, this is happening around us today. And I think art gives us a safe place to actually explore what it does to our psyche and our emotions.
Our production designer came to us having emigrated from the Ukraine to Israel. She went to Israel. She lived there for 1 year.
Wow.
And immediately her family, who had emigrated from the Ukraine in order to have a safe environment, found themselves involved in the Gulf War. So she learned about carrying a gas mask with her wherever she went. And she has brought some of that thinking to the production.
These are not abstract ideas
at all. These are real life experiences.
You know, Joyce, I always wonder, you know, how do you balance singing in a different language, your technique and your acting all at the same time? Because that can't be easy.
Well, I mean, I look at what we do as very much athletic, in particular, maybe like figure skating, because figure skating has an artistic quality to it. There's a lot of building blocks that you have to put in place before you can actually set it free and hopefully have it be communicative. It's why opera singing takes a long time to master. I'm still working on it. You can always have greater linguistic capability, musical capability. You can always be a more convincing actor.
Yeah.
I think when we get it right on the stage, there's absolutely nothing better.
Yeah. What a great feeling, right?
And yeah.
You know it instinctively that everything's clicking, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, you have a greatest hits album coming out, Rejoice.
Yes.
Interesting concept behind it. What are you trying to do?
Well, I invited my fans
to
take part in this. It was celebrating 10 years of recording, which kind of blows my mind that I can say 10 years. But I thought, you know, those albums mean nothing unless people are actually listening to them. And I have a very active communication with my fans and dialogue with them. So I thought, oh, God, well, greatest hits album is a little bit boring. You know, can we spice this up somehow?
And so you found a way to do it.
I found a way
Good
to do
you.
It. Yeah, they voted on the title. They've provided the cover artwork. There's a fan from Munich that's a photo from a concert that she took. No fancy photographer there. They've provided liner notes. They provided photographs for the middle of the booklet. It's been a real, it's a project of the people.
And is Climb Every Mountain from the Sound of Music on this?
Great. It is. This is with John Wilson and his orchestra.
I want to thank you for coming in, Joyce. Always good to have you.
Thanks,
Deborah
Steve.
Sandler, always good to have you, too.
Thank
good luck
you.
With the lyric. Again, this production opens up on Saturday, runs through the 29th. Ticket information, go to kcopera.com. Thanks again for coming in.
Thanks, you.
Steve.
And here's Joyce DiDonato. Yeah. Tomorrow on the program, find out what two former U.S. representatives from Missouri are getting up, going up against now these days in Washington, plus 35 years of Cypress Avenue with Bill Shapiro. Our show is produced by Steven Steigman, Danny Alexander, Beth Lipoff, and Cody Newell. For KCUR, I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.